Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Again, we've got Gary LeMaster in.
Good morning.
Dick Searle.
Good morning.
Silent
Chuck
Dick.
Chuck Williams.
We call him Silent Dick.
Silent
Dick.
Like
Silent Bob.
And then
good morning, everyone.
And then Mike Costantino. So
yeah, big mouth
last week found us on Christmas Eve discussing domestic terrorism. And we thought we'd do something a little bit lighter today. We had to follow up Daryl Johnson's discussion of what happened to him. When he was a member of the administration, he got attacked and he got sort of dumped. And then we went on. The second program was really about domestic terrorism. So we were really serious on Christmas Eve. So we thought, you know, on New Year's Eve, we'd have a little bit lighter program. And we tried to sum up the year. And the first part we want to talk about, what do we think is the biggest story of the year and what is its resonance? What's kind of depth? And, I guess I'll start off first, since I've got control of the mics.
That could change.
Yeah, that could change. and I think the biggest story of the year is the re-election of President Obama, biggest political story, and the election of so many Democratic senators. We won all the Democratic senator races that we had any chance at, and we won in places like Montana and North Dakota. And we have a lot of really progressive senators, Elizabeth Warren, with Tammy Baldwin, the first openly lesbian senator has been elected. In Arizona, Kirsten Sinema, the first openly bisexual.
She's on my list for Arizona, for coolest politician.
She is one of the coolest politicians.
Don't forget, Gary and I have lists.
All right, we're going to get to your list. And so I think that's the big story of the year. But the story behind that is that the Republicans, the Tea Party, corporate money, the far right put everything they had into this election. I mean, you had the Tea Party as a populist movement. You had the dark money. You had had all this corporate money coming in, some of it visibly, some of it through the Chamber of Commerce. You had the whole Tea Party. You had a candidate with a strong religious conservative support, and Obama won.
Yeah,
I think that's what hasn't sunk in. Obama won, and so did all these senators. Here in Northern Arizona, I call it the best of times and the worst of times because our local candidates lost. But everywhere else in the country, it was a major thing. So, Mike, that's my take. I think that signals a real change in the country. I don't think this is just a tactical political victory. I think this is a major shift in the country. They threw everything they had at it, and they came up short. Will they ever be able to do as much again?
Well, sure. The Ruth Conniff in The Progressive said that the best fun progressives can have right now is watching conservatives try to figure out how they lost the election how they couldn't buy the election, and that what's happening to the Republican Party. Let's go ahead and name the biggest instrument of the right wing is the Republican Party. So right now, as far as my list of best, certainly that made the best list. Edelman, Koch brothers, all these guys are trying to figure out why they couldn't buy it.
Yeah, I mean, Edelman put in what, $40 million into the contest, and he got nothing to show for it, which is kind of nice. I mean, we like that. And Gary, do you have a thought?
I was just going to say, don't forget how much help the Tea Party and the Republicans gave the Democrats during the run up to the election.
Romney too, right? Romney,
you know, by sticking not only one foot in their mouths, but both in many cases in Missouri, all the comments and all the attacks on women probably did more to help Democrats. Democrats than the Democrats did themselves.
And I think they're all jumping on Mitt Romney, and they're saying he wasn't a good candidate. But here's a list of their presidential candidates, at least some of them. Michelle Bachmann.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Herman Cain.
Herman Cain.
John Huntsman, an actual decent candidate, got nowhere at all in the modern Republican Party.
I think Herman Cain came closest to being nominated.
Right. He was ahead of Romney part of the time. And then you had Ron Paul, Tim Pawlenty, another sort of semi-moderate conservative, disappeared immediately. You had Rick Perry. We hear that Rick Perry wants to run again. He has the presidency in his heart. Rick Santorum. Well, there's a guy, I mean, from the Middle Ages who was reborn.
So Romney was the best of a not a very good
I think
guy.
So. I mean, I would argue. The other thing is that it happened, folk, is that if you listened on election night and haven't listened to then, is that Obama's margin of victory has been growing as all the provisional votes get counted. He's now got about 51% of the vote. That doesn't sound big statistically, but that's, what has he got?
He's got at least
5 million more votes than Romney.
In the polarized USA, an entire percentage point is huge. Going back to the best and worst lists, we already established that the best event was Obama's reelection.
Well, I think that the thing about Obama's reelection is to understand what it means. Because it's being presented, I think, as a tactical thing, as something that just happened. Obama was a better candidate, or they had better strategy. But I think there's a different meaning for the Republican Party and for the Democratic Party to this election.
But I actually hope they don't figure it out, Steve. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I think, just like the award shows, this is the award show season. So we want to give him also best politician. You know what I'm saying? He gets best movie. The 2012 election. He also gets best leading role.
To be honest, I don't know about the rest of you, but I don't see Obama's a very good politician, but he's not the kind of genius politician that Bill Clinton was. And he got elected. He got reelected anyway. And the economy, Chuck, why don't you talk about?
I agree.
The
well, we're talking about this year.
Yeah.
Yes, it's hard for people to realize that the recession is long over, has been 2 years over, and yet we're still have high unemployment. And so it's hard to define how much of that is structural unemployment. Are those jobs gone for good and how much not? Economists usually look at a number of full employment that varies based on long-term cycles and so on, and I don't think we're at full employment by any means, but I don't know that all those jobs that are gone are coming back. Many of them are now overseas. And also, we were artificially stimulating our economy, especially through borrowing on appreciated homes and spending money that wasn't there. The end result is, I think this is a normal economy.
Yeah, Chuck has had 40 years managing huge bank money and investments and stuff. Well, what the big story that we're not talking about today, because we don't really quite still know what's going to happen, is the fiscal cliff. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it was an extremely bad idea 17 months ago to create the uncertainty. I mean, I come from an investment background, and we don't like uncertainty. And I think it depressed the economy in the fourth quarter and the spending over Christmas because people don't know what their take-home pay is going to be because of the uncertainty and so on. So I think it's a bad idea to create artificial financial crisis.
And this is an artificial crisis.
Totally artificial. Now, we do have long-term problems, but this is just an artificial creation of the politicians because they couldn't figure out how to work together. Well, I don't think that makes sense. The Congress should be able to figure out compromises and how to work together. If you have an absolutist view, you don't belong in the Congress. The job of the Congress is to help govern and make legislation, and if you are totally against any kind of compromise, you really should not be in Congress.
So being a representative or a senator is not just having a position, political position, but having a willingness to do in your own, you know, various minds, what's necessary to actually govern the country.
Yeah, I mean, if I had a committee meeting of people at my investment firm and no one would reach a consensus, that everybody held to their opinions to the end, I would just make the decision and move forward. the president can't do that. We have a different form of government. We don't have a corporate entity where there's a final decision maker. And so we end up with impasses that you don't see in the private sector. But it seems very, very strange to me that people who hold a position and aren't willing to compromise should even be elected. They're not doing the job of a politician.
So, Mike, I know you want to get to your list of best and worst, and we wanted to follow our terrorism show with something a little lighter.
Well, Gary has the real
professional Gary has
list.
The real.
I have the immature list.
Gary's book is still out there. Gary, what's the name of your book?
The Tea Publican Book of Lies.
Didn't work for them, did it? They didn't win a big one this year.
They sure tried with a whole lot of lies. I thought it was one of the interesting stories of the year was PolitiFact.com named the lie of the year, and that went to Romney over the campaign ad for saying that all of the Jeep jobs were going to go to China. So
it's the lie of the year because, you know, everybody in Ohio knew that the Jeep was hiring. And if think about it out here, folks, if you heard that there was union jobs with all the benefits and good pay, everybody in your damn neighborhood would know that they were hiring. And they tried to do an ad, right, Gary, that said it wasn't happening and didn't go over in Ohio, and they lost.
They ran the ad. It was called out. PolitiFact gave it a pants on fire rating as a lie. And they were embarrassed in the national media for having run it. And what did they do? They continued to run it.
Right.
So, all right, let's go to this list, because I know that I can see Mike's getting restless over there.
The Tea Party made Gary's list of worst organization.
All right. Well, which list are we going to use? We've got 28 lists here.
We only have two, actually. But we do want to talk about the worst organization, Gary's nomination of Tea Party's number one. But he also backed it up with Freedom Works and Americans for Prosperity. These are all Koch brother front groups. Is that a pretty
exactly
accurate?
They're all really kind of related to the Tea Party. I would put in there as a tie the NRA.
So we talk about Charles. Oh, yes, I'm sorry, but Charles and David Koch back a lot of the groups that you hear about all over the country that have been around for a while. But yes, go ahead. So for your fourth runner-up, we're saying?
I would say NRA.
All right.
you know, their response to the Newtown massacre, their response to Aurora is more guns and, you know, nothing else. They have nothing else to offer.
Well, and that's a topic for another show because a lot of people agree with that.
Yeah, and I think that's something we need to discuss.
Yeah, that's a long discussion.
I think you'll find surprising information about it, folks.
And by the way, I'm a gun owner, but yeah. I still think that's utter nonsense.
Well, no, gun owners can give knee-jerk liberal responses.
And, I think we all got guns, but we're not in our. I was a member of the NRA when I was.
I'm too unstable for a gun. I do not have a gun.
I know, Mike. I know.
Okay.
All right. So how are we going to do? You have an interesting thing here. It says I think it's Gary's.
The interesting. Go ahead.
Best emerging political muscle. And then there's a group that I claim that I never heard of called Democratic Governors Association. What is that?
I believe enough Democratic governors got elected this cycle to, you know, even though it was a small group, to be much more powerful in some states. And so, and they are raising money. They're out there. They are doing at, I don't want to say grassroots, it's such an overused term, but certainly at the state level, which the Republicans have been doing the last 30 years, going into state legislatures. And so the DGA, the Democrats, we have an acronym for them. Yes, we do. Anyway, they're raising their own money and they're doing their own thing. And I think that's, and then they can influence from the state, national politics. But, that's my take on it. We can come up with. We talked about the other political muscle that we already mentioned that hasn't faded at all, and certainly is not emerging. And that's Sheldon Adelman and all his tens of millions of dollars poured into the election, and of course the Koch brothers and a few others. That's political muscle through the
so
checkbook.
So we spent 2 years talking about dark money, secret corporate contributions.
Yes.
And the vast amount of lobbyists and stuff in Washington, which still distorts. But nothing's really changed. I mean, right. I mean, in other words, Obama got reelected. All these Democratic senators got reelected. But we still have a lock on the House, and all these people, all the billionaires, still have their billions of dollars, and the next election they're going to give it another shot.
Well, you have to admit they did help the economy. People like Sheldon Adelman helped the broadcast economy quite a lot, actually.
What a windfall.
I'm sure Tom Tabak here is quite happy about it.
Well, let's talk about worst Arizona politics. Let's shift from national to, I think we sort
now,
of...
Now, how long a list is that for worst politician in Arizona?
Well, there's always one at the top. It could be a long list. Bad Arizona politicians would be a long list. Gary and I at least came up with the worst. Who do you got for worst?
I put in John McCain. I thought that... The thing that kind of iced it for me was his attack on Susan Rice. Mm. Before the facts were even in on Benghazi, he was saying he was going to filibuster Susan Rice's nomination if nominated. And the worst thing I thought was he said she's really not very bright.
Yeah.
So I looked it up and saw that she graduated with honors from Stanford and then got a Rhodes Scholarship to go to Oxford. So
and McCain graduated near the bottom of his class at
absolutely
at the academy, right?
with the nickname McNasty.
he certainly did turn into McNasty. I think that's one of the transformations is watching what happened to John McCain and the viciousness which he attacked her. And she had criticized him during the election 4 years earlier, but still.
Steve, do you think that's partly just cynical because they've created a situation where the Massachusetts Senate race will be open because of the nominee turned out to be a fellow senator who's a Democrat? So there will be an open seat after he's confirmed.
You know, politics is a game. Elections are contests. And we spend all our time here talking mostly about ideas and about politics and positions and stuff. But, you know, I mean, electoral politics is a contest. You try to win it, and politics has turned into this vast, clever game.
I'll be cynical and say that I think part of what's driving McCain right now is a search for relevance. You know, he's kind of fallen off the map nationally, and he's losing his position in the most powerful committee in the Senate. And I think he's feeling a little left out, so it's a kind of a cry, look at me, look at me.
And the media, who was in love with him for years, has sort of fallen out of love.
It took him a long time. They followed him through the last presidential election and before this one, but then they, you know, over the years watching the way he's behaved, it's pretty hard to understand, except in sort of frankly their negative personal attributes. And as Chuck said, there probably is a calculation in here. I wouldn't put it past them.
Gary and I agree on the worst politics, Arizona politics.
Oh, all right. Who's the
worst state? Now let's go down to the state level. All I right. got Brenda Barton, Gary, representative from this district.
I'm trying to think.
You have Tom Horn. Somebody has Tom Horn.
I have Tom Horn as runner-up to Brenda Barton.
Tom Horn was a fellow who was banned by the SEC from ever doing any stock trades when he was young. And his argument when he got elected was that happened when he was in his 20s. He would never do that stuff again. And besides, they banned him rather than convicted him of fraud. But now that he's gotten in office, Tom Horn has done a whole series of things, from hit and run things to illegal contributions.
To a little tryst with one of his appointees in his office?
Yeah, and the sexual problems. And I'm Gary, what is his position in our state government?
Attorney General.
Oh, my. He's the chief law enforcement officer.
Yes, well, moving on. Most trumped-up witch hunt by the GOP.
What did you guys pick on that?
I picked Benghazi, but the attacks on Susan Rice. But I have an honorable mention for the investigation into Solyndra and Fast and Furious.
I believe what we're doing currently right now, and that's the fiscal cliff, is completely fabricated. I mean, and like Chuck said, it was created 17 months ago just who knows why, just to have this sort of showdown.
Could not reach a compromise, and they still can't.
And there is nothing.
You had a quote about the fiscal cliff. You wanted, and Mike chose as probably the best economic spokesman in the country. Dean Baker has been on the show three or four times. Yeah, brilliant economist.
Dean Baker has been
very
on the show.
Clear, which I think is important.
Has been on the show at least three times, and he is a talking head that you see all over the place. You see him on CNN. You see him on Fox. I mean, he's everywhere. And Center for Economic Policy and Research. That's a nice website, by the way, with nice you like this stuff or you're interested in this stuff, and yet you keep getting confused by watching the network news or Fox News or any of the others for that matter. Go to his website. You'll see some nice, clear writing there.
And you had a quote you wanted to read from.
Well, I had a quote that I got off his website, but it was from The Progressive, from a lady named Ruth Conniff, who is an editor who edits some of Dean Baker's material. And it's not revolutionary. It's just clear, once again. It really isn't a fiscal cliff. It's an austerity crisis. And it is a political creation, not a product of the economy or the deficit. Now, this didn't come out of the economy. It didn't come out of the deficit. People made this. And she says that the real problem with going over the cliff is that to do so requires too many cuts to too many programs too quickly. And that throwing water on a small fire of recovery during an anemic recovery is not good fiscal policy. This is not a time to do that. It's taking away all of those things which stimulate the economy. Putting the money that's in there is not a good thing. So that's her take on the fiscal cliff, this man-made created fiscal cliff, which of course is a slope, as we all know at this table. Maybe it's been said a lot that January 1st, things start coming in slowly, which is one of the reasons Washington isn't feeling the urgency that we think they should feel, because we know as soon as they do, what happens? What happens, Chuck, as soon as they make a decision? The economy, the market.
It will help the markets to have certainty. There's almost nothing better for the markets than to know, to be able to anticipate the future.
And why do we give a flying crap about the markets?
Well, if we don't have 401ks or retirement funds, it still affects the spending. If you have a job selling things at a local art gallery, everything is people's cash flow and availability and self-confidence is all related not just to the stock market, but to their general feeling of wealth and security. So if I think I'm going to have to pay $3,000 more in taxes this year, which may be the case, I'm going to spend less money.
Sure. Both direct and indirect. I mean, I'm looking around this table. There's a few people here on pension funds. Pension funds are big drivers in the market. And
some of us, do that old-fashioned work thing too.
Well, but you're working to a pension fund.
Yeah, yeah.
The one they want to cut.
Yeah, Dick. Dick Searle is the analyst for local Democrats for the Democratic Party. The elections. He's the guy who studies elections, and we lost really badly here locally in LD6. We won all the interesting folks. And what is this? Does anybody know the statistic for Pennsylvania? Pennsylvania, majority of the voters voted for Democratic legislatures at the state level, and yet the Democrats ended up with one third of the representation. I guess that's from the national level. Here we had an independent redistricting committee. They put in three districts that were very competitive. Democrats won all of them, but the vote was really close. I mean, demographically, they were correct, right, Dick?
Well, I think they were demographically correct. It's rather interesting to me in that the Sedona area, looking at the voting there, was much more in the Democratic vein. That is, those candidates in our 10 precincts in Sedona and the Villageville Creek actually did support the Democratic candidates. You get into the rest of the Verde Valley, and it's pretty much a reversal of that. And then you also get into the further eastern part of the state, that part of LD6, and the same thing occurred. Coconino performed, I guess you'd say, as usual, as also being very Democratic. The net result is we have demographics that don't shift rapidly unless you have some sort of a major occurrence which influences opinion in the immediate, so to speak.
I was looking at your statistics, and Ann Kirkpatrick left the Sedona area about 1,300 votes up.
That's right.
All our LD candidates left the Sedona about 1,000 votes up. So in Sedona, it's one story, but then when you hit some of these other rural areas, it was the opposite.
Right? Well, that's true. I want to mention that, incidentally, it's interesting, actually, the registration in the Sedona area. There are fewer Democrats than there are independents, and there are fewer Democrats than there are Republicans. Actually, our registration is not as much as it was back in 2008. Yet, it would seem that what's happening is that there's been a gain in independence, but they're still voting. They still voted for the candidates that we were supporting. So it's an interesting question. I don't have the answer. Why don't they come back into the fold, so to speak?
I think one thing, folks, and we, Mike and I and Gary and Chuck and Dick have talked about for the last almost 2 years, is that if you want Social Security and you want Medicare and you want Medicaid and you want it for your families, you really need to support Democrats, because whatever criticism, and I think we all have a lot of criticism of the Democratic Party on this and that issue, but Democrats never come up with the idea of cutting your Social Security. Right now, Democrats in Washington are fighting as hard as they can to keep everyone's Social Security. They may lose, but they are fighting. We never are the guys who are going to take your Social Security away.
I think there's just sort of changing the subject just a little bit. One of the non-events of this past year was that the Supreme Court let Obamacare stand. And I think to a degree the Republicans were sort of looking forward, or at least anticipating, that it wouldn't. And so I think that was actually very important, because we've got two more or four more years ahead of us where it can be implemented, and hopefully people will see there are very definite benefits, and it'll gain support over that period of time, because it's going to be under attack for a long time.
Yeah, check on a reliable website, folks. There is a whole bunch of stuff that's already happened. Your kids can stay on your medical insurance until they're 26. They can't force you off. They have to provide you insurance, even if you have a pre-existing condition. A lot of good stuff has happened, and it just is, as Dick was saying, it's just really under the radar. So let's sum up. Let's start with Gary, and then we'll just go around the table. Gary?
Sum up what?
Well, what do you want to... Oh, you've got,
I'd like to add in a couple of things. I'd like to give an award to the largest fall from grace to General David Petraeus. I think that was one of the outstanding stories of the year as well. Here's a guy who was a complete national hero, revered by both sides, and now has found himself in a great controversy and out of office.
Should we remove general officers, heads of the CIA, based on some love affair? Is that in the country's interest? We've only got 2 minutes. Dick, do you want to add anything? Chuck?
Well, I hope we resolve things today in the Senate, but I'm not optimistic the House is going to pass whatever compromise they come up with. So we'll know by next week what happened.
And when Bush put in those tax cuts, he claimed that he could put in the tax cuts because we were running a surplus from the Clinton years, right? And now...
Well, the tax cuts were always imprudent. I knew it at the time. Many people in the investment area and in business knew that we couldn't afford them because of the, as soon as you had 9/11, the gear up of the military, of Homeland Defense and all that, made it clear that we would start running large deficits, which it just was a bad idea. We shouldn't have made those cuts. At this point, going over the fiscal cliff and having them disappear will be really traumatic for the economy. So I think it should be a slower process of restoring the cash flow to the government.
Gas prices. Gas prices going south, heading south. $3.12 the other day at the Cottonwood Giant. Are we going to go under $3 a gallon for gas prices? And if so, there's a whole lot of people care about that.
I know, it really affects people's income, but I thought it was interesting they blamed Obama when the prices were going up.
Is he getting credit?
It was
now?
All his fault, yeah. And now that the prices are going down, we don't hear diddly from the Republican right. They're trying to ignore it, and none of them talks about it. Gary, well,
I just want to comment.
Close up. Go ahead.
Okay, I'm just going to say that basically a lot of the efficiency measures that have been passed by Congress in recent years are beginning to take effect. We're using less oil.
There you go.
There you go. So there are conservations contributing this.
VVID.
Yeah.
VVID.org. This menagerie this morning will be repeated ad nauseum. VVID.org. You can find this and all our podcasts.
And you can listen to them over and over and over again.
Like we do.
Yeah. Been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.